Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's Solari Report, Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem. We're so delighted you could join us live, and we're joined by Dr. Allison Bingham, who has agreed to serve as our knowledge manager this evening. This is a topic where you want the best knowledge management possible, and it's just really a thrill to have her help me on this. Allison, are you with us? I just want to introduce you.
Thank you, Catherine, and thank you, everybody, and I'm glad to be joining the group this evening. I'm a Solari subscriber myself, so I have a passionate interest in the topic as well. So I'll be putting myself on mute, Catherine, and we'll be harvesting questions as they come up. Thank you.
You can find Allison's full bio at the commentary, Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem, Links and Resources. It's the commentary right below the commentary for this evening. And it's extremely important that you're logged into that commentary, that you're logged into Solari, and then into that commentary, because we have lots of links that I'm going to use in the discussion tonight, and it's where we would like you to post questions, unless you want to ask the question live. Remember, if you ask the question live, you're being recorded, and so your voice will be on the recording, and I want to make sure we have your permission. If you don't want to be recorded, then just post your question at that commentary. Again, it's Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem, Links and Resources, and it's the commentary immediately underneath Unpacking Your Financial Resources. Okay, so tonight we have about an hour of content and then an hour reserved for questions and answers, and I'm going to stop along the way and take questions, so it's not going to be 1 hour of straight content, 1 hour of straight Q&A. We're going to mix it up. If your questions don't get answered within the two-hour period, then I will make every effort to answer them by text on the commentary. And Allison's going to make sure that we collect up and have everything in the commentary. Feel free to just post comments if you have something to say and want to get it out. Now, if you want to ask questions by phone, hit *2. This is described in the instructions, which are both in both commentaries, both the one for the Solari Report tonight and then in the Links and Resource commentary. So just hit *2 and it will raise your hand, and then I'll go through and unmute you. So our goal tonight is to give a summary overview that will help inspire you to start to learn about your local area and look for opportunities. Clearly, if you watch the news, if you've been listening to Money and Markets, and see the elections in the U.S. and Europe, there's a tremendous pushback against central control, and in combination with the end of the debt growth model, both are going to be pushing more responsibility and more change back to the local level, and that means we're in a period of change, and that means there's an opportunity to do things locally. Now, if you've been a Solari Report subscriber for a while, you know that I always start with, or I encourage people to start with, the Come In Clean article, where I say if we want change, first start by changing yourself. But pretty soon after you go through all the different Come In Clean things you can do for yourself and your family, and you work outwards, ultimately you get to your neighborhood, your community, etc. And there really is a tremendous opportunity. And before we dive into our example tonight, I'm going to use one example and go through the one place to give you a sense of how to start to map out and access information for your local financial ecosystem. I want to talk about where the opportunities are, and I want to discuss them in 7 categories. Because I think it's important before you start to do something like this that you really have a picture, a vision of where the opportunities are. You've often heard me say that I think our current existing financial wealth is 1% of what it could be. And so the question is, well, where's the opportunity to take it from 1% to 100% of what it could be? So these are 7 of many areas that I think have some of the greatest opportunities. So let me just run through them. The first is to improve and support local leadership. If you are a good local leader, you've been under tremendous stress and pressure as things have centralized. And we tend to support and be interested in our national leadership not as much in our local leadership. And there's tremendous opportunity if people really organize and try and make sure that we have the best local leadership possible. One of the stories I always use is the election of my local sheriff about 5 years back. We had a sheriff that we weren't happy with, and literally all the sort of high-performance, productive people throughout the county just came together and went through a tremendous food fight to get a really good sheriff elected. And in that case, it got very, very dirty, but we all saw it through. And it was interesting because there was remarkably little conversation. It was just people wanting to get a good person. We have a great Salera report called Who's Your Sheriff? And if you've listened to it, you know that the sheriff is one of the most important positions within any jurisdiction, because a sheriff has supreme jurisdiction within a place, and literally the federal government cannot enforce within that jurisdiction if the sheriff says no. So having the right sheriff is very, very important, and particularly in an area, I'm in a very rural area, and very important in an area like that. So one is improving or supporting local leadership. The second is human and intellectual capital investment. The biggest investment we make in our communities is to raise and educate our young people. And then for many years, they all split and go to basically the central places, the big cities, and we have an incredible drain of human and intellectual capital. And so one of the opportunities, if you can make it attractive for the young people to stay back in Main Street and do well there, then that's a real economy builder. A second is where we have human and intellectual capital issues that we're trying to solve centrally, and they can't be solved centrally. They're too complicated. There are too many trade-offs, and in fact, each place is very different. So what you do in Brooklyn is totally different than what you do in our example of Lewiston, Idaho, which we chose as the town we're going to, or the city we're going to use for example this evening. And it's very propitious that I should bring up this opportunity, because the Republicans just held back, canceled the vote on the health care bill because they literally cannot get agreement within the Republicans, let alone bring in the Democrats. Healthcare is a perfect example where many of the trade-offs and choices are better made locally. And so as a perfect example of why, of something where it's very difficult for the centralized team to get anything done, there's a lot we can do locally. A third thing is safety. You've seen the new administration talk a lot about safety, whether it's the president now, Ben Carson has now been sworn in as Secretary of HUD. He's talking about the importance of safety, which brings me back to my old friend, the Popsicle Index. You get the Popsicle Index going a lot up in a community, and the
capital gains on real estate is tremendous. Same, you get the education improving, capital gains on real estate can be tremendous. So safety of the human capital in a place is very tied into wealth. So improve and support local leadership, then human and intellectual capital investment. A third area is privacy. I'm very grateful for the current brouhaha in Washington, because one of the things it's forcing is a discussion that our digital systems and our communication systems don't have integrity. And one of the opportunities is, where can a local community pull together and ensure the kind of talent and expertise we need so that the last couple of miles does have integrity? Sort of, you know, back the listeners out, because we're being financially harvested as a result of not having that privacy. Okay, next area is cost of equity capital. Right now, it's remarkable because we think we have free markets. Of course, we don't. But the cost of capital, of equity capital, to the big guys versus the little guys is extraordinary. I just had a great subscriber email me a question and say, how do we do local investment? Because everything that's being organized here requires accredited investors, and we're not accredited investors. That's because it's really designed to keep the little guys out from getting together and organizing. And there are opportunities to bring the cost of equity capital down locally. I always say, you know, I can go down to the Hickory Valley. I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. I can go down to the Hickory Valley grocery store and spend my entire
net worth on lottery tickets, or with a remarkable little time effort, I can drive within a reasonable period of time and spend my net worth on illegal drugs. But if I try and invest, you know, in the stock of the Hickory Valley grocery store, the owner and I will probably go to jail. So this is an area of tremendous opportunity, but one that's, it takes a fair amount of legal and complex work to do something about it. We have a couple of Solari reports that go into it and lots of articles that I've had my attorney write. So cost of equity capital is very, very important. How do we circulate equity locally in a way that makes money for us? The next is community strategy. I've talked a lot on the Solari report about Global 2.0 to 3.0, but clearly we have remarkable new technology coming. Or here, the price of, or the efficiency in the price of renewable energy, efficiency is skyrocketing and the price is coming down. So one of my favorite stories on our website is a German community that got together, put together their own renewable energy, and are now, everybody in the town gets energy essentially for almost free, and they're selling energy, you know, outside of the town. So where can we bring our costs down by bringing in and integrating new technology? Big area of opportunity. Then re-engineering government flows. One of my favorite examples, many of you have probably heard me use it, is a wonderful woman named Michelle Brown was in Florida trying to, she'd lost her job and was having trouble getting a new job and had to go on food stamps. Was having a problem with her food stamps and called tech support or customer service and got someone in India working for JP Morgan Chase doing a job that if she could do, she'd be delighted to do it, and then she wouldn't need food stamps. And she thought, this is crazy. The American government is paying me not to work. At the same time, they're paying JP Morgan Chase a markup to ship this job to India. Anyway, if you look at the food stamp program, I live in Tennessee. There are 1.3 million people on food stamps in Tennessee. That's 20% of the people who live in Tennessee. And if they could do all the servicing jobs on the food stamp program, they wouldn't need food stamps. They would be doing a job. And we wouldn't need to be paying a markup to JP Morgan Chase. But the other thing is, the food safety rules have shut down many small farms that could be economic and could be productive economically. We'd have fresh food, good for health care, and we'd have a lot more jobs and income in the community. So it's a very bizarre system organized through the federal government that we have people who are doing jobs that could be providing the services on federal contracting for lower cost, net to the government, and could be doing local food, if not for a whole series of regulations that really call out for federal regulatory relief. That's the kind of thing you find when you start to dig in and look at the numbers on an integrated basis across the government. So when you look at agriculture, when you look at healthcare, if you just go through all the different areas, it's going to come up. The initial budget blueprint for the Trump administration is indicating that they may cut or even cancel farm subsidies, which means suddenly selling local is going to become a lot more attractive. I would note in Idaho, the food stamp number of people in food stamps is lower than Tennessee. It's 13%. But that's still, it's $300 million for food stamps. Imagine if you could instead re-engineer that into a local farm business that would circulate, create far more jobs there. So that's one example of re-engineering government flows. Another I always give is the contracting that local businesses could do. I live in a community with lots of truckers, and you know, it makes sense to, if you're in a community with lots of great truckers, start looking at all the trucking contracts that the state and local government are putting out. Where is it that the local companies can compete effectively if you organize to do so? And digging in and looking at the numbers and the contracts. The contract budgets are always an amazing experience when you dig in and look federal, state, and local. I've seen many communities where the federal government is paying $150 an hour to do something that could be teleported in locally and somebody would be very happy to do for $25 plus health care. Two other ideas under reengineering government flows, just to give you as an example, is in the Reagan administration, and then I tried to get it done in the Bush administration, we used to have something called jumbo waivers, where the government would say, okay, within this jurisdiction and within these conditions, we give you freedom to move all this money back and forth between areas. And that's where, between healthcare and food stamps and housing, if you could get a jumbo waiver pursuant to a plan to reoptimize within a place, that's the kind of thing that might be able to happen in the next 4 years under the current group. And finally, there's something called the anti-plan, and that's a form of regulatory relief. I used to tell all the regional officers who worked for me when I was assistant secretary, basically make a list of everything you want me to give you permission to not do, and I will write a plan that says, okay, you don't have to do those. And if you look at what regulatory relief could do for small business and state and local government, it's absolutely phenomenal. In fact, we're seeing one of the reasons we're seeing a really positive uptick in the equity market since the election and in the general economy is that small business is feeling literally somewhat protected from the heaviness of really the wave of rules that have come down on them in the last 20 years. Then the seventh is shifting bank deposits and other flows local. The example I love to use here is there was one community where I used to get asked questions about how do you re-engineer our economy locally, and they had a wonderful local bank that was publicly traded. So I used to, and the stock was trading at the time at a very low PE, and I said, look, just everybody go out and buy the stock, right? You can buy it in your IRA, it's publicly traded, and then do a campaign to shift very significant deposits. They had a couple of very big banks, and a remarkable number of people who should have known better were banking at these banks. And of course, during the bailouts, a lot of people got angry at them. I said, shift all those deposits after you buy the stock, and you'll generate a big stock profit. So that's an example where there's a vehicle that allows you to realize gains on shifting the flows. Anyway, so those are seven areas. There are more, but let me just read them again. Improve and support local leadership, human and intellectual capital investment, particularly getting those young people motivated and finding great opportunities to rebuild Main Street. Creating privacy, arbitraging the cost of capital, getting the little guy back in the game. And then, wait, I just lost my place. Community, helping the community sort of shift from, take advantage of the shift from global 2.0 to 3.0, re-engineering the government flows, and then shifting bank deposits and other local flows. Now, here's a word of advice. When you start to understand and appreciate your local financial ecosystem, it's a journey. And you never know what you're going to find. You never know where the opportunity is going to be. Every place is different. Every person is different. It's quite quirky. And I very much liken it to gardening. You know, it takes a lot of work to go from planting your first seed to building for Psy. But there's, so this is a sort of a journey. If you're not literate financially about your local area, this is a journey that could take a long time. And that's why it's incredibly important that it's essential to enjoy the journey. And don't have a vested interest in how it's going to turn out. It's always surprising what works and what doesn't. Now, for the people, you know, our subscribers range from people who have no interest in numbers and financial statements to people who are very financially sophisticated. So it's an extremely wide range. If you find numbers and financial statements overwhelming, it's very important that if you decide to do this, that you go at it in sort of tiny bites, and not let it get overwhelming. There are many different ways to do it. You know, it's funny, people say, I don't have time to learn about how the money works around me in my neighborhood. And I said, wait a minute, you just spent 100 hours paying attention to the presidential campaign, but you have no time to learn how the money works around you if you just spent 2 hours a week or 2 hours a month. And what it comes down to is they find paying attention to the presidential campaign fascinating and entertaining, but every time they pick up the financial statements for their county or their city, you know, they just feel they hit the force field and they feel overwhelmed. So what you need to do is find a way to make it entertaining. I put up in the commentary a link to a wonderful group from Vermont who has programs called Questing, and they're treasure hunts to help you learn the natural resources and the history and other aspects of your place. So Questing is a way to do it. Participatory budgeting. A group in Brazil, when Brazil really hit the wall, the citizens literally came into their government and said, okay, we're going to help do the budget. We're going to help participate. And there's been a real effort throughout the United States in encouraging people, and there are different groups that have organized. You can find their websites to get different citizens involved in participatory budgeting. And in fact, if you go down to the related reading, I posted a book from the American Institute for Economic Research, which I really recommend, called Follow the Money, A Citizen's Guide to Local Government, that really lays out for you what the local government process is. And if you do want to get involved, how to do that in a way that's energizing. I also put up one of the members of our team is a retired city manager, Gary Heckman, and I put up two of his articles, Want to Have a Real Impact, Shift Your Time to State and Local Politics and Helping Your Local Community, one sort of advice about good ways to get involved. So there are many different pathways to do it. Now, you know, if you're an entrepreneur or business person interested in raising capital or increasing income, it's a very different pathway than if you are a parent and you're interested in better education for children and a higher popsicle index, or you're a person who's looking to move and wanting to do due diligence. So there are many different pathways, and I would encourage you to simply follow those things that you're most interested in, because again, I think you have to make this entertaining and interesting for you. But just hold out that suspense, because what I've found, if you just stick at it, if you just keep turtling through learning about how the money works around you, there are so many opportunities or surprises that you just never know which way it's going to lead. It's like gardening. You never know what's going to work and what's not. Now, our example tonight, let me turn to the example, is Lewiston, Idaho. One of the reasons I chose a place in Idaho is it's one of, when people say to me, if you were going to move, where would you go? And Idaho is one of my favorite states. I think it's really a very marvelous place. And one of the reasons I chose Lewiston is it's completely new to me. It's a blank. I've been to Idaho. I've been to many places in Idaho, but I haven't been to Lewiston. And I wanted to pick a place I didn't have a lot of knowledge about. It was new to me, but Allison did know it, and which made it a little bit, it was good to have a little bit of knowledge on the team. It's a city, but it's still small. It's about 25,000-26,000 people, so it's manageable. It's also the county seat, which is a very important role in the U.S. economy. The county seat, a lot of the money, a lot of organization, legal and financial, works around counties. America breaks down into 3,100 counties. So the county seat is the capital of the county as opposed to the capital of the state or of the country. So Lewiston, Idaho is the Washington, D.C. of Nez Perce County, which is the name of the county that it's in. It's right across the river from Clarkston, Washington. And in fact, if we were going to do a serious due diligence on Lewiston, we would include Clarkston. But we're not going to do that tonight. We're just going to go through Lewiston. But keep that in mind. You always want to be looking at the cluster that and the region that you're a part of. Now, before I walk through the links, I wanted to just stop and make sure you pull up the the commentary, Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem, links and resources. Make sure you're logged in. We've got a lot of dense links there. Allison did a wonderful job of pulling them together. So make sure they're pulled up. And then I wanted to give you an opportunity before we dive into the links to ask questions. So remember, you can hit press 2 on your phone if you want to ask a question on the seminar itself, or you can post a question there in the commentary under Unpacking Your Financial Resources. So let me just see if there are any questions. Oh, Joan says, logged in, dialed in, and listening to Bach. Was there Bach music? I didn't realize Bach was playing. I thought it wasn't playing. That's good. We love Bach here, as you know. Okay, so the first set of links, when I look at a place as a living system, and at the root of the opportunity is getting our financial systems aligned and having a win-win relationship with our living systems, whether it's people or the environment, natural resources. So Lewiston, as you can see from the map and the picture, is clearly a very beautiful place. It's at the intersection of the Snake River and the Clearwater River. And one of the, it's the Clearwater that comes down from the Bitterroot Mountains, right, Allison? Which comes from the Bitterroot?
It's the Clearwater River.
Clearwater.
Beautiful,
okay.
Beautiful river, yeah.
So you have extraordinary, I'll never forget, I had the sort of the smartest person at in the leadership at HUD when I was there, was sort of my guru on real estate. And I called her once after I left HUD and I said, what is the single most important thing that drives the equity value of real estate in a place? And she didn't even blink an eye. She said it right immediately. She said, water. So this is a place with extraordinary water resources. And those waters are very, those rivers are very important as well for transportation. You see, you have a port there. Anyway, but so I like to start with the physical, natural resources and the geography of the place. Geography is a major driver of economy. And what's very interesting is, what I find is Americans are very, place blind in terms of their interest. You know, we've gone through a period where we've been making a lot of money on an invisible sort of digital assets, and we've gotten a little bit disassociated from places. Anyway, so start with the natural resources. The first group of links takes you and sort of gives you links on all of those different aspects. Then I like to look at the people and the history. I'm a great believer that, for those of you who know what I mean when I say the field, and I have a link to Lynn McTaggart's book, The Field, down under Related Reading, is I really believe that there is a shared intelligence that gets created by the living people and other living things within a place. And that field includes not only what is happening currently, but the history. It's what Chief Seattle said. He said the dead are not powerless. I think there's things going on, and it really pays to understand the history and the culture of a place before you try and understand the economy, because the economy comes out from all of that. One of my favorite stories about economic development was there was a guy, Hewlett-Packard had gone out and decided they were going to hire all the smartest guys in Europe for their strategic planning group. So they made a list of all the geniuses in Europe and went out and tried to recruit a whole bunch. And they did. They succeeded. They were in a small town in the UK. I forget what the name of it was. And I was having dinner with one of these geniuses one night, and he said, you know, I was sitting in our office, and I realized the local paper came in and it said that the unemployment rate was 25% in the town. And I said, well, wait a minute, you know, if we're such geniuses, why can't we figure out, you know, we ought to be able to do something about that. So they did a mapping, and they mapped out the first question they asked is, what do we love to do here? And of the things we love to do here, what can we do that is really competitive in a global economy? And what he discovered was that there was one guy who had started, he's a photographer, and he loved to photograph animals in the wild, and there's some name for it, which I forget, some big fancy name. And he just loved doing it, and he built a business and started training people in his business. And as time went by, people spun out of that business and started competing firms. And they now had four highly competitive firms who were considered, they had a cluster of like the world's greatest talent taking pictures of animals in the wild. And so he and his group at Hewlett-Packard said, okay, well, that's what we're great at. Let's put some real resources behind growing that. We'll put resources behind having conferences about that. We'll have do all sorts of things to market our world-class talent at this thing. We'll try and draw in more kids to teach them how to do this. And sure enough, they, you know, that's exactly what they did. It was a real intellectual capital development strategy. And sure enough, when they were through, part of it could have been the economy turning around. I think when they finished doing it, the unemployment was 2%. So it's very important to ask the question, who are we? What do we know about? What do we love to do? And what is it we do that's competitive? Now, if you look at Lewiston, there's some unbelievably interesting features. One is you have an Indian tribal reservation, which I believe is a sovereign nation in and of itself. You were also the first white people who came to Lewiston were Lewis and Clark on the Lewis and Clark expedition. And so you now have a state college named Lewis and Clark. And then obviously because Idaho is so beautiful and you have the rivers there, it's an area of incredible recreation and parks. One issue you want to always look at, and we'll get to it when we get down below in the governance structure. When you're out west, the federal and states, the federal government and the states own tremendous amounts of land, and that can be a very defining feature. And issues of land management, land rights become unbelievably important. One of the things I always do is I always look within a place on the where are the institutions whose business is really about building up human capital and human character and supporting people. And so I always take a look at the church, the temples, the synagogues, the mosques, and the schools, because that you may have other civic institutions as well. But what you're looking for is to map out who's really in the business of helping us become and be excellent human beings. Okay, so let's look at governance structure. When you try and map out the financial ecosystem of a place, as opposed to living systems, the financial systems, finance is a man-made system. You know, we've just invented this. And we've invented financial systems to help us manage and allocate resources. And they all operate within a governance structure, which is basically created by the law. So before you really understand a financial structure, you've got to understand the legal structure that it's part of. I'm sure if you've listened to me on this lawyer report, you've heard me say very many times, you know, I have no idea how to reform the financial system because it's only part of a governance system. And so you have to be clear about the governance structure and who's in charge and why they're doing what they're doing before you try and tinker with the financial system. And that's why I keep struggling with, you know, who is Mr. Global? It can be very dangerous to tinker with a financial system if you don't know who's in charge and where they want to go. So if we're going to look at Lewiston and its finances, you want to start by saying, okay, what is the jurisdiction? So if you're a citizen of Lewiston, you're in the city of Lewiston. That's your first jurisdiction. So that's your municipality. You're in a county, you want to say, what's my county? So it's Nez Perce County. What's my state? And so you want to look at, okay, that's my state. And we've put here a series of different links to the different governance structures, including to the state constitution, because the state constitution will govern how counties and cities and municipalities can do things within that jurisdiction. And then it's also important to understand a little bit about how judiciary and law enforcement works. So if you want to map out the financial ecosystem, the first thing I would do, interestingly enough, is I would look at the legal ecosystem, which is, you know, what are the main jurisdictions that I'm in? And there are many, many jurisdictions. So you could be part of an energy regional compact. You could be, you know, we're all part of the, God help us, the GATT or NAFTA compacts or covenants. But you want to map out the key jurisdictions and look at, you certainly want to look at the state constitution and understand the state constitution and the federal constitution, because basically those two documents set out the laws of how your different jurisdictions work. And the state constitution will set out the laws on the books and records and how the finances of a municipality and a county are going to work. And again, as I said, land management, particularly when you're out west, is important. There's a lot of land that's federal land, and Allison has put some of the links here. Okay, so that basically helps you outline the governance structure. I would point out, we don't necessarily have them here, all states and local areas have public benefit corporations, so state and local housing agencies, or educational facility, or economic development, and there'll be a lot of different pools of capital and activities that are done in these public benefit corporations, but you really shouldn't start there unless you're interested in the school board. I would get a basic understanding of the sort of state and local government that you're dealing with. Okay, so before we go to the next set of links, I put up a chart that I love to get people to look at, and I want you to click on it to make it bigger. This is from the Pew website, and the link is in the list of links, and it shows you the unfunded pension costs and unfunded retiree health care and debt as a percent of state income for, wait, let me go back, for the 50 states. So it's debt and unfunded, the title is at the top, debt and unfunded retirement costs as a share of state personal income 2013. And what you can see is there's very, very wide discrepancy. Someone, I keep using the example of someone I know from the Chicago area just calling me and telling me about a friend's house. It was appraised at $3 million, and a year and a half later, it's appraised at $1.5 million because his property taxes got raised to $55,000 a year. What you're seeing, if you look at the states at the top, all of those states are in danger of underfunded pension and healthcare costs being literally coming through the municipal budgets and hitting a wide variety of local taxes. So, and if you're moving to a place, it's certainly one of the things you want to do due diligence. As you can see, one of the reasons I moved to Tennessee is because Tennessee is the second best in the country. We have the second least unfunded pension costs. Tennessee is very, very conservatively managed, and only South Dakota is ahead. But this is something you want to be cognizant of, because you as a citizen are liable for these costs. And one of the things that's going to happen, if you look at the states where the costs are high, one of the things that's going to happen is there's going to be a real tense process of whether or not you cut pension benefits or municipalities really have to cough up, and it's going to be a very difficult process anyway. But as you can see, Idaho is relatively conservative. It's below, on the left it says 50 states where you sort of hit the median, and Idaho is well below the median. So if Tennessee is number two, it's South Dakota, one, Tennessee, then Nebraska, Wisconsin, Idaho. So Idaho is in very good shape. Those are things that don't necessarily pop out at you when you start to look at the financials, and some of them can be off balance sheet. So you really want to be cognizant of those kind of surprises. Okay, so the next The next set of links is always my favorite. I love to get into the money. It's called Unpacking the Local Economic Engine and Finance Flows in Lewiston, Idaho. And one of the things that we talk about on the Salieri Report are the comprehensive annual financial reports. Those are reports that are required by all state and local government, and they're quite comprehensive, and they not only document budgets and finances, but they also document a lot of the pools and reserves that have built up in state and local at the state and local government and the public benefit corporation level. Now, I never start with the comprehensive annual financial report. I usually start by looking at the budgets and the financial statements for the key jurisdictions. So in this case, I would look, if I was due diligencing Lewiston, I would first look at the budget and then the financial statements for the city. I probably look at the school board, and if it was separate, which I believe in this case it is, and then I would look at the county and look at the interaction between of those entities with the state government and the federal government. Then I would go look at the comprehensive annual financial report. It's called CAFRs. Usually these organizations have strategic plans or economic development plans. If the city has an economic development division or agency, and here Allison has put up a link to their economic development strategy, I would look at that. All of these documents are going to tell you a lot about what's going on in the economy, who the top employers are, what they think their strategic advantages, whether natural resource or talent and skills. And so as you go through them, it's important to remember the budget is what you say you're going to do, and then the financial statement is what actually happens. And a lot of times the budget has, depending on the jurisdiction, a lot more interesting information about what's going on and what they want to do, whereas the financial statement is really much drier, and the CPA saying, okay, here's what really happened. And we're willing to certify. It's important to see whether or not they have a CPA, a reputable CPA, certifying that everything is fine. After you go through the budgets and the financial statements and the comprehensive annual financial report, the next thing I dive into is one of my favorite things, and that's the bond statements. State and local government issue municipal bonds. Some people call them tax-exempt bonds. And they issue bonds not just to finance their purposes. They can also issue bonds to finance activities for public agencies or even for private companies who are bonding as a result of going through government for economic development purposes. And the municipal Securities Rulemaking Board maintains a website with a system called EMMA that basically makes available to the public copies of the municipal filings for state and local governments and public agencies and authorities. And if you go to EMMA, you can click on they have a big map, and you can click on the state you want and start to do searches. Now, one of the reasons that I love diving into the bonds is, first of all, it is a criminal violation to say something in a municipal prospectus that is not true. So there is a much higher standard of disclosure than there are on typical municipal documents, and you have different CPAs and lawyers who have to check and attest and affirm. So it's a very high standard, and that's very useful. The other thing is, many, many times different issuers will put appendices in the prospectus that describes the general economy and really tries to make things understandable about that place. And they can be invaluable disclosure packages. When I worked on Wall Street, I used to know the guy at New York State whose entire life was just updating the economic appendix for the New York State official statement. And it's funny, I knew his voice for years, and then I was at a cocktail party in Manhattan, and I heard the voice and turned around and said, "Bruce, oh my God, is that you?" But there was nobody in New York, I think, who knew more about the New York economy than this guy. And the appendix was fantastic. It was, you know, he just lived to make it better. So occasionally you'll find things in the bond prospectus that are quite interesting. The other thing is you will get outraged at how much money is being wasted paying interest in underwriters when, in fact, there are a lot of different ways to finance it with equity or to crowdfund or to pull in your belt and do it locally. So sometimes you can get very frustrated going through the bonds as well. But I always find it to be very juicy. The second thing is the link below the bonds is the link to the SEC system for equities and securities for basically private companies who are publicly traded, or their securities is publicly traded. You may have a private company who has bonds that are publicly traded, and even though its stock is not public or listed, they'll be in the Edgar, and it's called the Edgar system. So the municipal bond is EMMA, and the SEC stock and securities is Edgar. Now, why would you want to look at private company stocks if you're looking at the financial ecosystem of the place? Well, in fact, today, Allison and I were looking at Lewiston and realized that there's a big paper plant there owned by a company that, in fact, is publicly traded. It's, I believe it's Clear, we have it down in the notes, Clearwater Paper. And I put a link to their proxy, which is up at the Edgar. I found it up at the Edgar site. You can also find it going to their website. And what I have found is if a private company is a very important employer or part of the life in a place, it can have it can be very influential in a variety of ways. So if you have one big plant in a place and that company decides to shut it down and move to Mexico, this is part of what you've been seeing big headlines about. It can make a huge difference. It was funny. A lot of times people I know will go work for a franchise that's owned by a big publicly traded company or a subsidiary that's owned by a big publicly traded company and then come complain to me and say, you know, I have no idea why those guys are behaving the way they're behaving. And I make them sit down and learn and read all the SEC filings for their companies. And once they understand the incentives and the concerns of the managers and what they're really worried about and why, what's happening to them at the local level makes much more sense. So I always find it's extremely important to understand the public companies in an area, because the public companies are trying to make their stock go up, and whether it's getting, you know, pulling cheap natural resources out of the area, getting the labor to be cheaper, the pressure is always on them. And so if you want to understand the ecosystem and you've got a publicly traded company, it helps to understand that little ecosystem as part of the ecosystem. Then the next three links are links that occasionally I spend a lot of time on, and these are sites. Two private ones, the Center for Responsive Politics, which provides information on donations to federal campaigns, and then the bottom one, Follow the Money, which provides information on state and local campaigns, and then the middle one is the government, which provides campaign finance data by individual contributor. And one of the things, if I'm really digging into, it depends on the situation, I love to dig in and look at who's financing the campaigns. What you'll often find is that the number one source of campaign funding is capital gains. Somebody trying to get, you know, they buy a piece of real estate, they get it to go up in value. That's a capital gain. They buy a company, they try and make the stock go up by getting government contracts. So there's a very tight relationship between where the government purchases, the government contracts are going, and the capital gains, and how it relates to the funding of the political campaigns. One thing, if you can get it, you always want, and I always find it fascinating, is the contracting budgets of state and local government and the federal government related to your jurisdiction. There used to be a wonderful website that would let you map out all the federal government contracts related to your state And not surprisingly, somebody bought it and took it private, and of course it went dark. But you'll see a lot and learn a lot if you can look at all the local contracting. And of course, what's going to happen if that happens, if we should bring transparency to federal, state, and local contracts by place, what you're going to discover is there are absolutely lots of areas where small business can organize and locally bring it in at a better performance at a lower price. Now, beneath the political contributions, we have the Urban Renewal Agency. And again, that's one of the economic development types of agencies that you'll see. I started to map out a lot of the different private retail and other activities in a place. You know, one of the classic tools I use to map out a place is I get the yellow pages. And you just go through and see what the clusters are. And, you know, I tend to, if there are too many lawyers, too many law firms listed, I tend to avoid that place. But you can see a lot. And we didn't go in and map out the Lewiston here because I think you're going to be much more interested in what's going on in your own area. But it always pays to kind of see what the flow is. And two places you can usually learn a lot about the private retail and professional flow is to go to the Rotary or the Chamber. So most communities, particularly in the United States and throughout the developed world, have a Chamber of Commerce with a lot of members from all the different enterprises in the community. And then the Rotary, which is a more sort of civic-oriented, but lots of these leadership in these areas come together and meet at the Rotary at least once a week to conspire. So it's another way to sort of learn and get information on your place. Okay, so before I go into, I want to talk about unpacking the local food system. That's the last set of links. But before I do, let me just see, do we have any questions? Okay, Catherine, those 7 points you talked about, are those on a previous Solari report? They're spread out on different reports. We did one on entrepreneurship and starting companies that had one at various times when Franklin and I have talked about sort of opportunities locally. But I could certainly do one that goes into all of them in great detail if that would be of interest and if it would be helpful to you for me to go through them in detail in one place. So just make a note if you think that's something we ought to do. I'm happy to do that because it is spread around in lots of different places, but I can pull them all together in links and then go through them in detail. Safety, let's see, somebody says safety was in there too. Yeah, safety was under human and intellectual capital, so maybe if you could just note that, Allison, and make sure that that's under there. While the security to read the Emma stuff, you must acknowledge having read this information and must accept the terms and conditions as the use of the Emma website, including restrictions on the use of third-party data. Oh, I see who's asking that question. Why am I not surprised? While the security, because it's basically a tremendous amount of products by lawyers for lawyers and run by lawyers. I forget, somebody, I once heard a speech where they did a comparison between how many lawyers we had here versus how many they had in Japan, and you realized, oh, can we please put the engineers back in charge? Okay, so let's go back to the Lewiston charts. The first set, unpacking the physical environment, is just on the natural resources. So look at the title on each little box. So at the end of the text, the first box is unpacking the physical environment. So those are links on natural resources. Then the next are focused on the culture, the people, and the history. And then the next set of links are understanding the governance structure. Basically, what are the legal structures set up within the, which the resources are allocated within. I liken the a community to a series of, think of it like an irrigation system where you have flows and then reservoirs, and the flows and reservoirs are organized within the different legal jurisdictions. Okay, so then we had the chart on the unfunded retirement costs, and then the next group is where I get into all the different financial information. So the budgets, the financial statements, the comprehensive annual financial report, or what we call the CAFRs, and then the bond and stock information, the political contributions. So that's the big, and then all the different areas of different enterprises in the community. Okay, here we go. Okay, Blanco, Texas, are you there?
I am.
Fantastic.
Yep, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep, okay. The analogy between Versailles and the whole concept of gardening is a most unique thing, because Versailles was developed by a landscape architect that actually worked for the treasurer for Louis the whatever he was, who actually had stolen from the treasury, and that's how they created Versailles. So this is, I think, a perfect analogy for where we are now.
Right.
Economically.
Right. Well, imagine if we had stolen that money and spent it on making our places wonderful instead of on going into space.
Well, we have stolen that money, and we've created what? And that's been your point for a long time.
Oh, long. Right.
Yeah. So the point is, when we are looking at our local economies, we are almost looking as if we are a mini guy, hoping that we're not going to be the Fouquet, who was the treasurer at the time. We don't want to be the Fouquet who comes into our local county or whatever and try to straighten it out and not look at it, not have them look at us as if we are building our monument to ourselves. So it's really hard when you're someone who has something that you want to contribute to your county, and you're possibly looked at from that point of view.
Right. Well, one of the things I suggest, and it depends on where you are and what's there, is it helps to do this with other people. So if there's a group of people who are interested in doing it, you know, it's a lot more fun in numbers. And it's also easier to get local resources to help you and to educate you if you're doing it in numbers. And that's why if you're going to try and lobby for change, you want to pick off an area that's not going to, you know, land you on the, you don't want to step in a wasp's nest, so to speak, because there are things going on in the pools. You know, a lot of money has been siphoned off through the back door to finance Versailles.
Exactly.
And so you want to be careful.
Well, and remember, Fouquet, who was the treasurer at the time, was Louis put him into prison in an apartment in Paris. But you know, we don't really want to go into the apartment in Paris. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we don't piss off the local Louis while
right.
we're trying to move our counties ahead. And that's something rather that you have encountered, obviously, like times 10.
Well, here's what I find. What you want to do is you want to find the local, what I call the Titanic Turners, and support them. So what you want to do is make life easier for the great local leaders as opposed to make life difficult for them. And there may be opportunities to make life difficult for the Scorpions in a way that protects the local leaders and you know, relieves them of responsibility for taking them on head on. You know, you have to, these are all conspiracies you have to find the opportunity and do. But the way to avoid that mess is to find the local Titanic Turner and basically say, okay, how can I help? But there is also one thing you can always do if you have a critical mass of people. Transparency can stop a lot of shenanigans in a way that's safe for everybody.
Right.
Because as a public official, I can't say, you know, I could do this for a dollar, but I'm going to spend $10. That's not legal.
Well, I don't think that I'm unique in that. I think a lot of people who are going to respond to this are going to say they've looked at their counties, and to be a Titanic Turner means going to the, quote, Titanic Turners who are total, you know, jerks. And, you know, I don't want to, like, pull blackmail on them, but we have to, like, wake them up to realize we want to be the Titanic Turners. Because,
right.
You know, you've pointed this out more than once. The federal government is no different than it is at the local government. We can only win this thing by working from the local.
Right. But you have to start, you know, the way you build community wealth is by building family wealth. And you've got to start just like that guy in the UK started with, well, what's here that's working? You've got to find the local people who are working and who are trustworthy, and you got to support them. So you've got to, what you don't want to do, what you see a lot of people do, is go in and make life more difficult and complicated and risky for the Titanic Turners. That's not what you want to do.
Right.
So that's why it's so.
And what you're saying, too, is that Titanic Turners may not necessarily be the guys on your side at the time. But you can make them Titanic Turners by encouraging them to become the people who are now suddenly doing the right thing, because you as a person in your community has pulled enough initiative from fellow people in your community to suddenly turn the tide, even though that wasn't something rather that turned up in the last election or something else. It's something that you have personally put forth in your community, and now that this person who is in the ability to make the change is now the Titanic Turner. And he is the winner as a result
of
it.
So the winning strategy has been to be a piggy or to team up with the scorpions. And so what you got to do is you got to get
Trust
the piggies.
Me, I know about them scorpions.
I know you do. But P.S. folks, you can tell we know each other. So the piggies, you got to swing the piggies over and say, look, you can make money if you play ball and support the Titanic Turners. If you don't, we're going to make your life hell.
Exactly.
And so ideally what you're looking for is to peel the piggies away from the scorpions. And I'll be honest, the reason a lot of people are piggies is because that's the strategy that's worked. So,
precisely.
You know,
and until somebody in your community, like it could be me, could be you, could be someone who's listening, who says, I'm going to be the person that won't allow that piggy to continue on his thing. He now needs to become the Titanic Turner based on my input into my system.
Right. So, So I think it's very important to get something positive done. So that's why you want to be looking for who are the people who are worthy of support. How do I support them to get something done? Where's that opportunity? But to do that, it really pays to have a good map of how the money works in the place, so that you don't step on
the
it.
The map, you know, it's the plan. It's the understanding of the matrix. You know, if you want to look at it from a matrix standpoint, that's certainly a way of looking at the map. But you're absolutely right about the map. And most people don't understand how to go to their community and look at the map.
Well, what you're doing is you're trying to figure out what are all the ways we can make the pie bigger here. And then if we can create a vision of how we make the pie bigger, then we can find a way to attract all the piggies to helping us make
the
pie bigger.
Well, as a landscape architect, for example, that is what I was. And you sit there and you create a matrix and you go, you put the same number of columns on the left that you do on the right. So you say, you know, light equals such and such, weather is such. And you do that, and you find that when things start matching up, you start seeing the map.
Right.
And I think if more people could understand the matrix, and maybe that's something rather that, you know, we always talk about the matrix. Certainly John Rappaport talks about the matrix. But maybe if we really understand what the matrix really is, people could map that matrix out, and they could understand better how to map, you know, where they're going.
Right.
Just a thought.
Yeah. No, in fact, when we go through, if we do a Salier report on the seven areas of opportunity, then one thing I should talk about is the, you know, sort of where are the matrix barriers that stop these opportunities from happening.
Right.
So, but
well,
I think
I've taken up probably enough of your time because, you know, you and I
okay.
could talk for like a week. I thought there was a gap there, and I was hoping that people would sort of sign on, and I hope they have questions now.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm one of those people, you know, when you're sitting with a group of people and everybody's talking and all of a sudden there's that lull, you know,
yeah.
I'm that person who fills in the gap. I just can't help it. Just can't.
Okay, Blanco, Texas, I'm muting you out. Thanks again. I agree. Landscape architecture is a perfect metaphor for what
yeah,
we're talking about here because it's definitely a living system. Okay, so I'm going Kathy, down to the first.
We've got a few more comments. We've got one subscriber who's asking, what things are you looking for in the CAFRA?
Okay, so hold on. I have one person who had their hand up. I'm just going to ask them. Okay, so Walnut Creek, California, do you still have a question?
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, great.
It's great to hear your voice. We've emailed many times, but I've never heard your voice.
Yes, we have, and it's lovely to reach you, you know, directly. Yes. I'm going to have to kind of hurry because somebody's going to be picking me up shortly and looking out the window as we speak for my ride. I met with the staff, senior staff for my state assemblywoman. It's her first term. And as I talked, using some of your language and concepts, and presented her with the Wikipedia page on the participatory budget, I was really pleased. She took it. She said, this is great. I'll talk to Congresswoman about it. And I told her about the webinar. And as I talked about some of these things, I got the distinct impression that they didn't even understand it. I mean, this is complicated stuff. And I look at my congresspeople and I hear them speak. And, you know, I get a sense that a lot of them just don't have your level of sophistication. And so I'm fairly hopeful that we might find a lot of people that don't get it as well as they might and would like to be more effective with this guidance, if you will.
Right.
So I've been trying to use your chart to kind of construct something so that I can then go do some homework, fill in the boxes where you have information about Lewiston, and go back to her. And it's not working real well.
Yeah, well, but what will be very helpful is if you know more about how things work around her. So what you're talking about is looking for opportunities to integrate. And one of the things I wanted to mention, our Top Picks editor, Brad, is on tonight. And I'm very excited because he's moving over and spending more time just looking for stories of local innovation. And I think one of the things that will help you when you meet with your local leadership is if we can find stories of what's working and what people are doing in other places. There's nothing that helps a municipal official more than examples of other places doing other things. And that's what we hope to provide more of. So one of the things I'll think of is how can we provide resources to you when you do talk to your local officials? So I really appreciate your doing that and the feedback.
Well, and I love your charts. And so I printed them out thinking, okay, I'll just white out the blank spaces and go back in. Well, that's not going to work. I'll play with it. And if I develop something, I'll shoot it off to you.
Okay.
But it's a great outline, but it has to obviously be tweaked for the various, I mean, I'm in a fairly large city in the, you know, East Bay area. So it's going to be, it's like, whoa, that's overwhelming. But I'll pick what I can speak to and meet with her and hope to mobilize some other people.
Okay.
Thank you, Kathy.
Okay,
thank
have
you.
A great evening. Bye. Okay. So any other questions before I dive into food?
Catherine, hi, that's Allison. Yeah, we had a few questions on listed in the commentaries, and we had one gentleman ask about what things are you looking for in the CAFR, C-A-F-R?
So, you know, it's funny. When I dive into the CAFRs, I never know what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is, again, think of the flows and pools in a place as the you know, sort of as the, you're looking to see where the water goes and how much is there. So I just dive in trying to build a basic map of what are the flows and what are the pools, and what does that tell me about what's going on economically in the place, and how much of it is running through state and local government, how much is the federal government involved. So I'm just, I never know what I'm going to find. It's always a, you know, I'm always surprised and amazed. But I'm also looking to see where there is an opportunity, where something is not economic or could be changed. So I'm usually thinking of federal reengineering, or I'm thinking of, you know, where is the entrepreneurship and innovation that could happen. But I literally, when I dive into the CAFRs, I never know. I'm just trying to map the whole thing out and then thinking about, okay, where is the opportunity? And that's why it takes a lot of faith to do this, because many is the time I will do a due diligence on a place. I'll dive into the CAFRs and I'll just feel after a couple of hours of plowing through everything in the budgets, oh, there's nothing here. I'll sleep on it. I'll come back to it the week later. And I'll do it a couple of times, and then all of a sudden, bang, it hits me, and you find it. So that's why it's like gardening. You try stuff, you muck around in the mud, some things work, some things don't, you prune, you develop. You never know what you're going to find, because it just takes time to understand understand a place and to see the opportunity. And it takes a critical mass. That's why for me it's a lot more fun to do it with people, with other people, particularly people who have different backgrounds and ways of looking at things. Okay, so let's see. Somebody says, my county has great GIS data posted online. Any tips on which maps I should overlay in order to illuminate a local ecosystem? I see great categories of maps for demographic, population, density, and zoning, but I don't understand why 5 of the 7 subsidized housing units in my county are geolocated within a mile radius of my downtown. It's like gentrification never happened. How can I see through the shiny, pretty maps to the city's strategic plan? I would definitely, if you have the time, look for the different planning documents that the planning department or the economic development agency produces, because that may tell you something. And if that doesn't tell you something, going to the planning board meetings and asking questions of the staff during breaks, things like that, will help you. But I think this is, again, usually the subsidized housing units are placed in a way related to who's looking to sell real estate, or they're looking to cluster them in a certain area for strategic reasons, and you would really need to talk with the planning staff. Sometimes they'll tell you, sometimes they won't. But I think it's very difficult when you're first diving in. First, I would want to look at the land and how the land is managed. Then I would want to look at the demographics, where the people are and why. And then, yes, I'd get into the development, including the government finance development. Okay, then somebody says, this woman is right. The local governments don't know what this is about. Rhode Island knows about creative economy, but honestly, that only holds up so long. So there is money to be spent on the arts. You know, many of the people who have been successful in local government have been successful because they were willing to work and stay within the stovepipes. What we're talking about is much greater integration between the different functional areas. Remember, the accounting has been divided up by functional areas and not integrated in a more dynamic way, which the software tools make very easy to do now. But the other thing is there's not a lot of integration between public and private. You're watching the federal government in a state of shock because you have a private guy who talks price instead of rules. You know, they've just had several decades of rule people, and now suddenly they've got a guy talking price, and they're in a state of shock. And part of what's going to happen now with the debt growth model being over is government's going to have to start thinking dynamically about price in much more integrated ways with the private economy and private sector. Okay, then I have an employee friend, graduate of Lewis and Clark, who's semi-retired and lives in Boise. The Idaho Department of Labor makes our association onerous for as few bucks a year, so don't think you'd be escaping bureaucracy. Fun facts, I do know all the words to Hot Rod Lincoln, which Wikipedia notes was set in Lewiston, ID. What's Hot Rod Lincoln? I'm going to have to look that up. Meriwether Lewis allegedly met an untimely end for publicizing his findings about pre-Indians who were 8 feet tall and had red hair, something repugnant, it seems, to the Smithsonian institutions. I have several books on this matter. Yeah, I know all about it. One of my favorite communities in America is Hohenwald, Tennessee, where Meriwether Lewis is buried. And I would just mention, if you have never read the story of the Lewis and Clark expedition, it's absolutely fascinating and a very interesting comment on America. Okay, so let me dive into food and then we'll take the rest of the questions. I spent 2005 working with Harry Blaser in Kalispell, Montana, mapping out the local food systems and working with Harry on how we could do a venture pool to finance and develop a local food system. Less than 1% of the food in Kalispell at the time was coming from local farmers. It was tiny. And it was a fascinating experience, but I have found it's very important when you start to map out your local financial ecosystems or get involved locally, you want to get involved in something that's positive. What you'll find is a lot of the foodies are very positive people and great fun to work with. One of the things I've listed here is Weston A. Price is a foundation in Washington. They have a wonderful network and have done a lot to build clubs locally. And one thing I always tell people is go find the Weston Price Club and see, check out the Rotary, check out the Chamber, but check out the local Weston Price Club. And then check out the farmers markets. There's a lot that organizes around the farmers markets. Or if you have community-supported agriculture, CSAs, and sometimes you'll see associations, like it used to be in Kalispell, it was Farmhands was the group that put out the bumper sticker, "Who's your farmer? Where's your money?" Terrific people, but they made a map of all the local farms and all the local restaurants who bought from the local farms. So it's a matter of networking a little bit. If there's an Edible Communities magazine in your area, that's another group that pulls together a lot of resources that helps you understand your local food system. I'm very concerned. If you looked at the annual wrap-up, we focused on food and global food production and what it meant to investors. And one of the reasons I did that is food has been off the radar screen of many people because generally food prices have not been as volatile as energy or other prices. And for most Americans, food prices as a percent or food as a percent of their budget has come down. And I think a lot of that is because they've lowered the quality of the food. And anybody who's been buying high quality food, you know, it hasn't been coming down, it's been going up. So I agree with that. But I think there's real reason to be concerned about ensuring high-quality food. And so I think investing time and energy and then even money in finding and accessing your local food system is a wonderful way of participating with the local economy, and you will, by and large, run into some really great people if you do it. So I would encourage you, at a minimum, to definitely start to map out the local food system. Now, I added, and I should just mention, because the hunting and fishing and wildlife in Idaho is so great, we have a link for for the state, the portion on the state website for hunting, fishing, and wildlife, which is highly regulated, and that area is in all areas in the United States. Okay, so we had two related Salieri reports that I wanted to point out. One was my interview recently with John Rappaport, Can We Make America Great? We're more focused on the federal budget, but I think over the next 4 to 8 years, the opportunities are going to be rolling down as the federal government reengineers. And then Agenda 21 with Rosa Quar. One of the things that state and local government has been dealing with is way too much regulation and rules. And one of the problems of working with local officials is they are really overdone and overburdened and overcomplexified with rules. There's a great new book that I reviewed on the website, Technocracy Rising by Patrick Wood, and it describes the fact that this is not an accident. This is very purposeful to basically entangle us all in the cobwebs of rules. And part of the problem is we're trying to run the economy with rules instead of price, and it doesn't work. And that's part of what got battled out in the last election. And the reason small business is so hopeful is they're dying. You know, basically we've seen across this country tens of thousands of small farms that have been put out of business or are being put out of business by regulation that is not creating a healthier food system. So it's really economic warfare. And Agenda 21, which I think has a new name now, the UN has upgraded to a new version, but Agenda 21 is about some of the rulemaking that's come down that's really affected communities, particularly rural communities. And Lewiston is not quite rural, but Idaho has a lot of rural areas. Then related reading, as I said, we have I described the first three links, which are two of the articles from Gary Heckman, and then a great book from the American Institute of Economic Research that will help you understand governmental budgeting and the process. Then the Wikipedia entry on participatory budgeting, and if you do a search for participatory budgeting, there are a lot of groups working on that. And then who is responsible to make America great again is my description of the four profiles, the Titanic Turner, the piggies, the scaredy cats, and the scorpions, which is my way of oversimplifying the politics within any governmental structure or place, and just to think a little bit more clearly. Because the key thing we need is to support great leaders. And I always despair every 4 years when we all spend a lot of time on the presidential campaign, but we don't begin to spend that kind of time understanding and sleuthing out and supporting the local leaders. It can make an enormous difference. As I said, when we were able to get a good guy elected sheriff, what a fantastic difference it made to all of us. And as I said, the sheriff jurisdiction is very important. I didn't put up the Salieri report, who's your sheriff, but I'll, if our producer listening to this could just add that, I would appreciate that. Then Economics 101, many, many years ago, my pastor asked me if I would write a curriculum for his 10th grade class on how to learn economics. And so I had no idea how to do it, but I just sat down and did it. And it's not a bad list of sort of different ideas, because I focus on learning about economics by looking at your place. So there are some ideas. And for those of you particularly who homeschool, you might find it interesting. Then a piece called Living History, where I talk about why it's so important to understand history. If you're going to understand the economy and the politics of a place, you have to know the history. It's very interesting. One time when I first moved to Tennessee, I was trying to understand why all the investment firms did business with firms from different cities. And there was very peculiar networks of how the investment flows worked. And finally, I realized somebody pulled out an old railroad map and had me look at the old railroad maps. And I realized, oh, you know, all this grew up around the railroad lines, and then the railroad lines went away, but the investment relationships continued. And so if you understand history, things make a lot more sense. Then the next two links relate to this idea of the spiritual nature and reality of a place. Lynn McTaggart's book, The Field, is a great introduction to what Rupert Sheldrake describes as morphogenic fields. I was amazed. I went to Wikipedia today to get the link for morphogenic fields. It's gone. It's been censored. I absolutely believe that one of the most important things to the health and well-being of a place is its morphogenic field. Consider that the shared intelligence. Think of all of us as, you know, having brains that are computer processes, but our databases are out there in the field and it's shared. And, you know, once upon a time, I didn't know what to think of Sheldrake's theory. And then when we built Community Wizard and databases and mapped out how money worked by place, what I discovered is everything I'd learned in business school was not true. Money didn't flow according to return on investment. It flowed around clusters of what people know. And so knowledge management was a real driver of what happened in markets, not necessarily return on investment. And I used to just marvel when I was assistant secretary, because everybody would lobby me to get the government to rig profits for what they knew. You know, if the market changed, they didn't want to learn something new. It was really quite amazing. And so this concept of shared intelligence and shared values and shared culture is very, very important. And I think it's important to understand. One of my greatest concerns about turning the economy healthy in a place is I think there's a lot of psychic garbage and sort of spiritual harm that's been built up in a place. That's why I include the link to my favorite story from that I tell all the time about the woman who murdered her best friend's husband, called Karma Means You Don't Get Away With Anything. It's and you'll see a link to the a story from Jung. So I think we have a lot of negativity that's built up in the field, and part of making places wonderful is turning around, you know, clearing that out and turning that to a positive. And part of that is getting, as I was talking about with my friend from Texas earlier on this discussion, you know, that's part of getting the Titanic Turners back in charge, getting the Scorpions out of having any real power, and get the Piggies, instead of helping the Scorpions, helping the Titanic Turners. Then there's an old article from the bailout period, Can Our Communities Serve as Financial Safe Havens in Troubled Times? Some of you from the comments I've been getting today are entrepreneurs, and I will make an effort to get all of our links on sort of the venture capital and community development issues up as well. And then finally, last year, I have a little Solari group, and they asked me to write a letter to my congresswoman and basically say, look, just tell all the webmasters at all the agencies to get all the data and put the data up. And, you know, we'll get the data and figure this all out ourselves, but we could make the reengineering, the federal budget process much easier, because, as I said, the wealth that we could create with the different opportunities, if we could start to discuss and integrate, it's very, very explosive. Anyway, so those are links that may be of interest and may help you. And again, we're happy to go back and provide a tremendous number of links and other things that we've done. Okay, so that takes us through all the links. And with that, the content section is over. So now we go to any more questions and answers. What have we got?
Yes, Catherine, we do have one individual who's asked about what happened to the venture pool for local food. Restaurants will lie about having local food because the demand far outstrips the supply.
Oh, what happened to the venture pool for local food? Now, remember, this was 2005, so it was a very different time. As you went through the economy, the farmers, the grocers, every aspect of the economy, everyone was incentivized, and part of it was the agricultural subsidies and government money, to play ball centrally. Nobody was, or very few people were interested locally. And what had to happen was we just had to go through a period where the demand for organic food grew and grew and grew. And now what we're seeing is, it's interesting, if you watch a DVD called The Real Dirt on Farmer John, it's listed in the annual report under the food documentaries that we recommend. And it's the story of a farmer who does he shifts from traditional agricultural to organic, and he starts a CSA, and then he runs out of land. And a whole bunch of his customers get together and, as investors, buy land that they can lease to him. And it's an example of this growing organically. But what has had to happen is enough people have had to demand the food, and now enough people are going to have to start thinking about, okay, how do I lock up land? How do I lock up water? And we're starting to see investment vehicles available. So, for example, there's one now where they're raising money, and as they raise money, they go buy land and convert it to organic. So it's almost like they're taking the land back one investment round after another. So it's starting to happen, but nowhere near as much as if I think a critical mass of people in a place said, you know, strategically, this is not a matter of price, and this is not a matter of, you know, what dividend are we going to get. We need to lock up the strategic resources. We need to make sure we have a local food supply that is safe and healthy for us. So I think we're, as we go through the kind of change we're going, both in the equity markets and in the and sort of in Washington, that is, we're now going to see real entrepreneurial talent and real money start to break out to do that. That's my theory. But what we did is we walked into every obstacle that the matrix could confront, and it was long before people realized that they had a reason to really strategically want or need a local food system. Okay, so which one should we take next, Allison?
Have a couple of nice comments here. We've got one gentleman who says the Central Texas Solari Circle proposed to do this analysis for that metro area. It obviously takes a commitment of time. This outline instruction provides a great deal of momentum to find the most interesting steps to start with. Yahoo!
Okay, so one thing I would say, because you guys have a circle, I will tell you, if you have a number of people, if you have enough, let's say you have five people, and you call up a bank or an economic development agency and say, you know, we're citizens interested in understanding how we can do more in our place, would you give us an hour presentation? If you're a group of people, they will do it, or they will often do it. And so you don't have to do this alone. You can get participation. Another thing you can do, I should mention, is the small business people in a place, many of them have angel networks, and some of the most interesting people, you know, a lot of the local venture is done very conspiratorially and quiet. But if you can plug into those angel networks, they have a phenomenal amount of understanding and interest and are clearly doing things. They're basically financing entrepreneurs, and that's what we need. You know, what I would love to see, one of my favorite ideas is getting the local community colleges or universities to team up with the small business people and create internship programs that will allow kids to float and learn lots of different kinds of businesses. And if they make it through the internship program, you know, you have a local Shark Tank. And you're seeing more and more local communities do local Shark Tanks where, you know, the kid knows if they make it through the internship program, they're going to have an opportunity to get capital for whatever their idea is. And they're a great resource of bringing in the 3.0 technology. So, but it takes a cluster of angel networks and business people and leaders in the local university. And as we were talking about before, you got to get everybody out of their silo or stovepipe and talking about, you know, what could happen to the economy here if we could have a much higher retention rate of the local young people. Okay, what do we got next?
We have another comment that's related to that. One subscriber notes, I'm starting to see ways I can engineer collaborative relationships between college students, faculty, and local decision makers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the young people that are the, you know, part of this is a generational thing. You have three generations. You have the young people, you have the sort of people on the line running the different enterprises, business, government, and then you've got the older generation. And the older generation has a lot of experience and capital, and it's a matter of helping them get behind the young talent coming up in a way that is energizing for the middle management. A lot of that middle management, interestingly enough, are baby boomers who are ready to sell their business, but they got nobody to sell their business to because we haven't bred up that next generation of young people. And so if you can get the older people who have the board and capital behind the young people in a way that gives a buyout to the middle management or is supportive of them and the local economy, that's when things really start to click. You got to get those generations aligned. Okay, what have we got next? I'm interested in helping college kids find ways to successfully navigate their future. This training is inspiring me to see additional ways I can engineer collaborative relationships. Oh, that's the one you're talking about, right?
Yeah. We have an elected official and businessman who has made several comments, and he actually raises a very interesting point, Catherine. He says, I'm, in addition to my business, a local elected official, and I have to note that the unionization of municipal labor does make costs quite high. Electors don't seem to understand that most of them are on the opposite side of the table from unionized government workers. How do we undo this? The end result of all the grabby union negotiating is exactly what California has, insolvent state employee pension funds, etc.
That's a very good question because I know which state this subscriber's from, and it's a very recalcitrant problem in that state. I don't know enough about the state to answer the question. I think one of the things that has to happen is more transparency around the issue. To get local citizens really galvanized to do something. And I think as the pension funds are insolvent and benefits are cut but municipalities are asked to pay more money, you know, somehow it's going to come to a head. I don't know what happened in Detroit and Michigan. My impression is there they got legislation to override the unions. I don't know enough about what's happening in that particular state, but this is absolutely going to have to come to a head. It's one of the reasons an effort was made to globalize all the manufacturing, because part of that strategy was if you could move everything abroad, then you could bust the unions. So there's no doubt about it. It was a busting a union strategy. Now, the other thing I would say is, although you know, I want to be careful. You know, the unions in many respects have stood in the way of productivity. At the same time, the union movement in America is really what supported a much more human economy. So the question is, how do we get out of this trap in a way that doesn't, you know, we don't want to go to a strictly oligarch society, and that's a lot of what the union stopped. So it's a tricky question, but you're going to see this at the federal government level and the state government level, because government workers are being paid significantly more than the taxpayers' income is going down, and they're being loaded with shadow work, whereas the government workers are being protected. And so, you know, it's interesting. If you basically set up an incentive system and said government workers got paid according, you know, it was X times the popsicle index. So if the popsicle index is not 100%, it's 50%. They only get 50% of their pay. And you gave them 2 years to get it to 100%. You'd be amazed to see the change in America. And that's the problem. You know, the The pro-centralization team has designed the incentive systems so the central control continues to happen and you don't get the innovation you need. But I'd have to look into that particular state, and I'd have to know more about the particular situation. What I will tell you is, if you look at the level of change that's coming and the financial pressure of what the end of the debt growth model means in the next 10 years, all of these things can be addressed and changed, because the financial stress will become unbearable. Anything else?
Catherine, we've got a couple of additional comments. Charts are great. As always, we're listening. Steve and I are going through it with some of our local information on the county seat we live in. Great resource. This is very exciting and an excellent framework. Our other subscribers also following up, and she's definitely got her thinking cap on in helping college students and outlines a number of goals and action steps, requesting some feedback on whether she's in the right direction. Don't know if you want to tackle that now or a later follow-up.
Oh, how do you find the local angel funding? I just think by doing searches, networking. If I couldn't pick up any from just general internet searches and sort of the local newspaper, I would go to, depends on where you are, but I'd talk to the local newspaper, and then I'd go to the Rotary in the Chamber and say, I'm interested, here's why, you know, is there anybody you can put me in touch with? So I'd go through the Chamber and Rotary or the local community paper, whoever you're comfortable with. And it's simply a matter of networking. And again, you know, I come back to this, this is like growing a garden, and you just have to start. And it's always very quirky where the opportunity will come up for you. But if you just keep at it, that's why I say, you know, budget 2 hours a week or 2 hours a month and just keep at it. And slowly, your intention to be involved in a positive way in the area that interests you, it could be local angel financing, could be venture, you know, it could be food, it could be whatever. But if you just keep putting that intention out, you're going to start to network with people who have the same interest. Now, you just want to make sure you're finding Titanic Turners. And, the scorpions will always show up and say, how can we help you get involved? You don't want to do that. So you want to be exceptionally discerning about the quality of people that you do anything with, other than, you know, it's fine to network with everybody, but be very careful about who you get involved with, because your success will come from being with people you really, whenever you get together locally with a group of people who have high integrity, miracles happen. So you want to be very, very careful about who you finally take action with or who you group up with. But if you can find a group of people who want to conspire, that's when the fun really begins.
Catherine, we have one caller who wants to know if this is being recorded, and we could perhaps talk about transcription.
Yeah, so we record every Solaria report. We make a transcript. So the raw recording will go up tonight, and then the detailed recording or the edited recording will go up by Monday. And then we will have a transcript. We always try and do it within 2 weeks, and the transcript will be up. So everything will be there. And of course, this commentary will be here, and you're free to keep posting questions. And if I get enough direction, people want to have another Solaria report on one aspect, or if we want to look at another place. So for many of these areas, to answer your question intelligently, I would need to drill down and look at that place. So the more feedback I can get on, so somebody's saying, can you remember offhand what resources are posted for navigating the legal landscape of small-scale investments in local businesses? We have a ton of great stuff on that. And what I will do is, before tomorrow, I will post the links here for all that information. So we will get that posted right here. Okay?
And there's another question regarding, are there ways to connect with Solari subscribers in my area?
Well, that's why we try and do lunches. And lunches is a way for you to meet. If we have a cluster of people in an area who want, so for example, in May we're having a lunch in Louisville. And the reason we're having, it's the crowdfund lunch, it's donors to the crowdfund for Joseph Farrell. The reason we're having Louisville is a wonderful woman from Louisville wrote me at Christmas time and said, you know, I've moved to Louisville and I'm really having trouble finding people who resonate with my way of thinking. Could you have a lunch in Louisville? So we did. And that was so she and some other people could meet each other. So if you express interest, we will make an effort to try and do that. I have tried to get people to meet each other online. And what I would say is there was too much trouble doing that. And the lunches have been much more successful. But we will make every effort to try and get you together locally. If we can do it through a lunch, we definitely prefer to do so. Okay.
And then, Catherine, I had one other question for the audience. As you and I had mentioned earlier, the tables and charts that we've put together are really a comprehensive first cut, and I have no doubt that our subscribers may have other suggestions for data points. I've seen a few already posted, and we can be updating those tables to include other data points that people would find relevant and of interest that we hadn't thought of. Is that something that we can do on the commentary line?
Yeah, so we can absolutely do it in the commentary line. And also, if people have other things that we haven't said we were planning on doing, somebody says, let's have lunch in San Francisco Bay Area. Well, that's interesting. It's the second request I've gotten for the San Francisco Bay Area this week. So, but please, if there are links or areas you would like us to address, please post them here. So give Allison and I feedback of other things you would like us to pull together. We're going to put the link to, did the producer put, who's my sheriff up there? Let's see. If not, we'll get it up, and then we'll get all the different things we've had on local investments. And I'll look around for things where I've addressed more the local, these local ideas. So give us your feedback on what in addition you would like, and we will make every effort to do it. Any more hands go up? No hands going up. We've got some profoundly knowledgeable people on this call. Any more questions that you see in the commentary? Oh, there's a hand up. Okay, San Mateo, you're up. Hello? Allison, can you hear me?
Hi. You know, it's funny, I'm listening to this and everyone's very quiet, which is fine, and I'm just taking in a lot of information. But being from the San Mateo, or you know, San Francisco Bay Area, and doing a lot involved in local politics and kind of since 2008, we're at a point in this area where we feel like there's no hope.
Uh-huh.
And it's also such a huge area that it's kind of hard to know where to start in the county that we're in. I mean, it's a massive county and it's such a high population, and do you have any feedback for people who are in not rural small towns, but big city areas on, you know, kind of where to begin. That's
right. Well, it's funny because one of my dearest friends in the world, who I stay with him and his wife in Palo Alto when I'm out there, and he was chairman of the planning division of the planning board for many years, and is very active in the different a couple different not-for-profits and schools there. And you know, he struggles with exactly the same thing you're describing, because the intensity of the you know, the size of the population, the density, the intensity. And here's what I've seen works. What works is picking out, you know, I go back to picking out one local leader who you can support, or one organization. And what he does that seems to be very successful is he focuses his effort on one thing that's working, and then he helps them do better, and he supports them. Right. And so here's you're not responsible for the whole thing. If everybody just picked up one thing that was in their interest and did that, you know, then you get a critical mass of people doing that. So to me, what you got to do when one thing is that dense and intense is you got to break it down. And the thing I think he's gotten the most joy over, he's helping one of the local private schools that does a lot of scholarships and really offers a lot of opportunity in East Palo Alto. It's pretty wonderful. It was one of our Christmas donations one year. And but I would find something that is very much in your heart and find somebody doing it. You know, he had somebody running the local school who was really excellent and admirable. They just needed some help. And so where's, you know, you got some great theater groups, you got some great schools, you've got, where's the one that you resonate with? And I wouldn't worry about the whole big, I would, you know, if I were you, I'd keep learning about the money, because there's so much opportunity. So I continue to learn about the money, but I'd be very happy to find one local enterprise that's really making a difference and just help them.
Yeah, that's a good way. Yeah, I like that idea. That's a good way to do it. And then we have a group that meets for coffee, you know, once or twice a month, and just kind of talks about what's going on and supports one another. And I think that would be a good place to start for that group, because all
right.
those people have such different interests. That then you're
right.
not, you know, everybody's kind of, it's way more fun if you're working on something that you're more interested in rather than trying to learn a whole new, you know, business or.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons I focus on food, because everybody is involved in food. You know, everybody
yeah,
has to shop, everybody, and everybody's going to get pinched by quality issues or cost. And you're in a place that has heavenly farmers markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I am working in the food industry, which is my other passion. But it's, no, I like that idea. I think I'm going to suggest that to our group. And because everybody's kind of at that, I think at that point, and I don't want to say everyone in California, but a lot of people are just kind of exhausted.
I completely... What you need to do is find your local Titanic Turner and just I'll use an example.
We're hard-pressed to find somebody who's doing good.
Well, just email me, because I can put you in touch with a lot of local Titanic Turners. It's a little bit more north.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
There's one other question. Okay, thank you very much. There's one other question I want to take from a particularly favorite place of mine, Morgantown, West Virginia. So, Morgantown, you're live.
Good evening, Catherine.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to say quickly to you and your team, thank you for all the great work you do. I'm a new subscriber, and I've loved everything so far. And it's
that's great.
It's really awesome to be able to get on the phone and actually talk to you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. I always tell my subscribers, you know, I used to work for people I didn't like, and now I work for people I like. It's great.
Well, thanks again.
Okay, thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we will get those links up, we'll get the recordings up, and we'll get the transcript up. And as you sleep and digest and turn this over in your mind, just please let us know how we can follow up and continue to be useful as you learn to unpack your local financial ecosystems. Allison, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Brad and some of the other team that came in, and thank you very much to our producer, who's doing yeoman work behind the scenes. All of you have a great evening.